on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about?
All righty, guys, we are here for another episode of the Auto Bid. I am Aaron Robinson, joined as always by my twin brother Andrew Robinson. Today, we're joined by a special guest. We have Sean Paul, a writer for Making the Madness, one of the biggest up and coming guys in the media game right now. So, Sean, thanks a lot for coming on with us today.
Hey, it's a pleasure. You know, I'm glad I couldn't pass up the opportunity to join the best podcast featuring twins, identical twins at that, in all of college basketball media. It's an honor to be here. Thank you, guys.
Yes, sir, man. So as always, want to remind you guys to make sure you guys are liking this podcast, giving us a rating wherever you're listening to this podcast, man. Make sure you guys are subscribing, telling a friend and tell a friend, man. Throw us a retweet on Twitter or Instagram if you're, you know, wherever you're getting this content at, man. Also, make sure you guys are streaming my guy, Pull Up Tay's music. That was him on the intro. You also hear him again on the outro, man. Make sure you guys are streaming his newest project, Life Ain't Fair. That's out on all platforms, man. So make sure you guys are getting my man's streams up, man. But as I said before, man, we got one of the brightest minds in the college basketball world right now on here, Sean Paul. So like I said, right now he's a writer for Making the Madness, and he's also got some other projects that he's contributing on. So, Sean, just for the viewers, give him a little background, about yourself, how you got into the media, game, and, what you're kind of working on right now.
Yeah, I'm Sean Paul, like you said, right, for Making the Madness, which is a website run by Jonathan Warner at Bracketologist3 on Twitter. I kind of just got to know him over Twitter, just, talk college hoops with him. And then over last offseason with COVID going on and everything, it was a pretty boring time just in life. There wasn't much to do. There wasn't any sports on. So I was like, hey, I have some idea for some writing stuff. I'm probably not going to be very good at it right away, but I have some ideas and, I could probably help the site out. So I did, and then it's all been uphill from there. I didn't really expect it to turn into 5,600 Twitter followers or whatever I have now, but I just think that the one thing people have told me is that how I work hard and keep producing content is really what keeps people coming back to my account and checking my stuff out. And honestly, it's all a blessing that I have this many people reading my stuff and that kind of stuff. I never expected that to happen.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, we definitely want to go ahead and dive right into it, man. Obviously, you've been working on a whole bunch of stuff recently, man. Been breaking commitments and putting out your many different articles. But the one that you recently put out was your list of breakout players from each conference in the country. If you haven't already checked that out, make sure you guys go to my guy's Twitter account and check that out, man. It is definitely a very insightful piece of work. There's players from, like I said, mid-major, low-major, high-major conferences. I believe, like you said, the criteria was under 10 points per game, correct?
Yeah, I battled with that a lot. I asked a few different people. Eli from Heat Check, the founder of Heat Check, I kind of like his criteria. He does the don't start more than like half the games the team's played. I didn't really do that part, but under 10 points per game seemed like a good barometer to use because that excludes Jaden Ivey, who I think everybody's on the train that he's going to be an All-American. I think he's going to be the Big Ten Player of the Year. But hey, that made the list tougher. I know some people did not like my Big Ten pick, but you have to pick somebody. So
now we're gonna dive into some of your lower mid-major, low-major rankings. Obviously, me and Drew, with this Auto Bid podcast, that focus primarily on mid and low-major players. So one of the more surprising picks that I saw that you had was in the America East. You had Thomas Weebly from Hartford as your breakout player for that league. And for those of you who might not know, last year he only averaged 3 points and 2 rebounds per game. So I mean, why are you so high on Weebly, being able to have a breakout year next season?
Yeah, I went back and forth on who I was going to go there. Some of it was just that I didn't want to include a ton of transfers, and I think there's some transfers that could live up to that criteria. I only included one in the whole entire thing. It was Troy Hannibal at Murray State, but I tried to shy away from players who transferred, not because they can't break out, but I just think it's a little different than players who have already been there. So I went with Weebly because Miroslav Stoffel transferred to Central Michigan, who was their starting big man last year. So assuming, just looking at the roster, Weebly's probably going to start. I don't think he's going to have like a tremendous season, but I think he's going to contribute enough, like 7-8 points a game, 6 rebounds on a team that's going to contend in the America East.
Now, speaking of, you know, contending in the America East, I mean, how much of a chance do you give Hartford to repeat? I mean, obviously they added DeJuan Clayton from Coppin State, who was an all-conference player in the MEAC. They're going to get they're actually going to return, you know, a pretty good you know, amount of their core back from that team that won the America East last year. I mean, how big of a chance do you give them, you know, with DeJuan Clayton, with Austin Williams, with your breakout player of the year, Thomas Weebly, you know, to be able to repeat in the America East?
I think they're up there, but the America East is just such a tough conference. Like last year, you saw Vermont and UMBC. They were the top two teams in the conference heading into the America East tournament, but they both lost to UMass Lowell and Hartford, and they ended up playing for the America East Championship. I don't really think anybody saw that coming. So that's a conference where really anything can happen. Stony Brook was a team I liked last year prior to their COVID pause, but they never recovered from that. They started off hot. I believe they beat Vermont or UMBC, one of the two. It might have been Vermont, but they just never recovered after their COVID pause, which we saw a lot of teams. Not everybody was able to beat Baylor and end up winning the national championship following a COVID pause. But Stony Brook is my top team in the America East right now. They returned a guy like Frankie Policelli, who's a very skilled 6'7" power forward. You've returned Tyke Green. You return your lead point guard, Juan Felix Rodriguez. And then you add a guy who scored a ton of points in his career from Fairleigh Dickinson with Jaleel Jenkins. He's been to the NCAA tournament. He was a big piece on that team that went to the NCAA tournament a few years ago. I think they won in the first four, I believe. But then you look at a few other pieces they bring in, like Anthony Roberts. He's been to St. Bonaventure and Toledo and Kent State. He missed most of last year with an injury, but he's a guy that can definitely score the ball. And you can't forget about Elijah Olaniyi, who transferred to Miami last season from Stony Brook. He's a guy who was one of the best scorers in the America East a few years back. I think that's the kind of scorer that can really set them apart from the rest of the conference, because they have some guys coming in, Olaniyi, Jenkins, who can absolutely score the basketball. And they struggled a little bit scoring-wise last year. I think we're going to see them be one of the more dangerous offensive teams in the conference next season.
Now, I think it's I'm glad that you mentioned that, because, you know, we actually had this debate in our group chat not too long ago about the American East, and definitely a shout out to the New York Jayhawks, my guy Coach Jay David, for coaching my guy Frankie Pocelli over there at Stony Brook. But I think me and Ace are a little higher on UMBC, and we actually had a chance to interview Coach Jim Ferry on the auto bid after he got the job at UMBC. And, you know, we really like that roster. Obviously, you know, you get Hakeem Bird transferring from Marist. You're also going to return Darnell Rogers, LJ Owens, the sixth man of the year in Keandre Kennedy. And then you also, you know, are going to bring in Ray Salmon, transfer from DePaul, who started his career at Monmouth. I think that UMBC has, you know, the chance to have the best, you know, backcourt in the entire American East when you look at depth. I know you probably have something to say about that, but how do you feel about UMBC? We know Vermont's obviously always going to be there. Vermont's always going to be in the running when it comes to the American East. And obviously, you know, I remember playing there back in our Quinnipiac days, man. They had a tremendous home court advantage up there in Burlington. But, you know, how do you feel about UMBC's roster and what they've been able to put together, you know, via the transfer portal, and then obviously what Jim Ferry's going to be able to bring to the table?
Yeah, look, they lost RJ Idlerock and Brandon Horvath along with their head coach Ryan Odom to Utah State. I think it's going to be a bit of a transition period, but Jim Ferry's done a really good job getting guys back. Keandre Kennedy entered the portal. Darnell Rogers entered the portal. They both come back, decided not to transfer. And then you add two really good guards with Hakeem Bird from Marist, who's a good, really good young guard, and Ray Salnave, more of an experienced player that's played at the high major level last season, and he was really good in the MAC a few seasons ago for Monmouth. I think they'll be top three in the conference probably. If I had to rank it, I'd probably go Stony Brook 1, Vermont 2, and UMBC 3. Vermont's going to be up there because they have Ryan Davis, who was a conference player of the year last year. You do lose Steph Smith, though. That's a big-time loss because he's a really good scoring guard. But they return a few other pieces like Justin Mazzulla and a few other guards around there. I forgot one of the players that I was thinking of. But Vermont overall should be pretty solid, definitely. They're always going to contend in the conference, no matter who's on the roster, it seems like. So they'll be up there.
Yeah, I definitely like Vermont. And I like Stony Brook as well, man. But I'm definitely making my case for UMBC, man. I think, like I said, I think UMBC is going to have the best five guards in the league. You know, obviously with Sal Nay, with Hakeem Bird, with LJ Owens, Keandre Kennedy, and, of course, Darnell Rogers. And then I think, you know, just knowing – the way that Jim Ferry likes to play. A lot of people weren't too high on the hire when they hired Ferry, but obviously he's a guy that won two NEC championships at LIU. I think that this year, actually, he did a better job than people give him credit for at Penn State, kind of inheriting the roster, you know what I'm saying, that he did with the turmoil with the coaching change with Chambers that happened this year. I think he did a better job than people give him credit for at Penn State. And obviously, they're going to get up and down. They're going to score a ton of points. You know, they're probably going to be scoring probably definitely in the 70s, 80s, every night, you know what I'm saying? And I think they're going to be able to defend it. They also have some JUCO guys coming in. They have a JUCO big that is – I forget his name right now, but he's super athletic. He's going to be great protecting the rim for them. And I think defensively they're going to be able to get some guys some problems because they're going to be able to switch, you know, all four guards, and they're going to be able to have some length at the rim. So I think UMBC is going to be – will be my favorite to win the league. I love Elijah Alani. I think he has a chance to win player of the year this year in the American League. Obviously, he averaged about 20 a game before he left to go to Miami. But I just think that UMBC has a better collection of guards. And like I said, I think they're going to actually be able to contend defensively as well to get some teams some problems out there in the American East.
Yeah, I think Stony Brook's guard depth is a little bit better overall, but UMBC is really good too, and I think that's the best thing about the America East. There's never going to be one team, I feel like, that stands out always, unless it's the Anthony Lamb, Steph Smith, Vermont team from a few years back. I just don't feel like we're going to see that very often. Anybody can really win this conference. I wouldn't be surprised to – I'm not going to say Maine. I don't think Maine will win the conference, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a team like Hartford, who's probably going to be like fourth in the preseason, come in. You know, Moses Flowers is a really good player, and those guys have a lot to play for. If, like, in my eyes, if you don't think that them potentially moving to D3 isn't going to field these guys, I don't see how it doesn't, because even though a lot of these guys won't be on the team in 3 years or whenever that goes into effect, that's still their alma mater that they're going to want to rep forever. They're not going to be proud of saying, hey, I played at a D3 school, but hey, they were once D1 and we went to the NCAA tournament. When you say that, it's not going to have the same ring to it.
Yeah, not for sure, man. I couldn't agree more. I know that, you know, Coach Gallagher there is going to have those guys, you know, ready to go for sure. I want to circle back a little bit, Sean, because, you know, I definitely wanted to ask you about your breakout players. And this player that I have on my mind right now would not have qualified for your breakout players list because he averaged 12 points per game. But I think, you know, being a mid-major platform, I have to talk about this guy. And that's Kenneth Lofton Jr., who's coming off a huge week, you know, obviously playing with Team USA at the U19 World Cup. You know, he's coming off a season at Louisiana Tech where he averaged about 12-7 a game as a freshman, won the freshman of the year. But he scored 20-plus three out of the last five games of last season. And I've been going into this season at Louisiana Tech, coming off this FIBA World Cup gold medal, playing alongside, you know, Chet Holmgren and, you know, Jaden Ivey of the world, things like that, man. I think he's really going to be proud to be maybe in that 20-10 range next year for Louisiana Tech, man. But, I mean, I think this was kind of a coming-out party for Lofton because, you know, unless you're like a basketball savant, you know, like yourself, like a lot of guys that are in the media world, you're not really going to know about a guy like Kenneth Lofton. What are your thoughts on him going into next season? You know, what do you think the kind of jump he can make, you know, going from year one to year two for Louisiana Tech and Conference USA?
Yeah, 20-10 is pretty lofty expectations, but I mean, maybe in a couple of years. I don't know if you'll do it this season, but Louisiana Tech's a really good overall team. You have Isaiah Crawford coming back. You have Amori Archibald coming back. You have Kobe Williams coming back, who played like one hand during the NIT because he broke one of his hands. So he's only playing with one, which kind of hindered his ability to handle the ball a lot. But you also had Keyson Willis from Incarnate Ward, who was a really good scorer there. They were one of the more inefficient teams in all of college basketball, but he himself wasn't too inefficient. He shot at 35% from deep, which I think is going to improve on a better team. Louisiana Tech was young last year. They're still relatively young this year, even though they have a few seniors, but their two lead guys, Isaiah Crawford and Kenneth Lofton Jr., are going to be the biggest parts of that team. Lofton, obviously, like you said, he had a big time coming out party in this FIBA U19. He led the U.S. overall average points wise with 13 throughout the entire tournament. He was very impressive yesterday. Yeah, yesterday against the future number one overall pick from France, Victor Wembanyama. He's going to be the first pick in 2023, more than likely. And he had him jumping on a few pump fakes and was able to draw fouls. He's really good at drawing fouls. He's able to use his body really well. And he knows how to get guys, you know, moving the wrong way. He knows how to get guys off balance. And that's a really special skill. I don't know if he's ever going to be an NBA player, but he's going to be one of the more electrifying college basketball players to watch in the next three seasons for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for Lofton, man, I think, you know, with him, I think he's such a load on the block. You know, I mean, he can pretty much, you know, he has an array of moves down there. He has great footwork for a guy of his size. And I think the biggest thing for him is going to be trying to develop his game to the three-point line. I know, you know, high school and college is a lot different, but he showed capability of being able to shoot the three ball in college. I mean, excuse me, in high school, shot about 35% his senior year in high school. I think if he can kind of add that to his game, I mean, shoot, I think that can definitely get him, you know, an extra 5 or 6 points per game if he can at least become a threat from out there. But, I mean, like you mentioned, man, I mean, he's definitely a force down there on the block. And I think that when you're looking at, you know, Conference USA, I think, you know, when you're looking at a guy of his size with his skill set, man, I think that he's going to be a guy that, you know, can make a big-time jump, you know, on the national stage even going into this upcoming season. But even looking at Conference USA, man, obviously, you know, Old Dominion got a transfer and C.J. Kaiser from North Carolina Central. There's going to be a lot of teams in that league that are going to be able to make some noise. Who do you like in Conference USA going into next season? You know, some teams. Obviously, you know, we know what North Texas was able to do winning Conference USA this past year and being able to advance in the NCAA tournament. But what are some teams that you like in that conference, you know, going into next season?
Yeah, my number one right now is UAB. I love what Andy Kennedy's done there so far. They add a ton of transfers. They're like the Arkansas of mid-major basketball right now because they just keep bringing dudes in. They add Jordan Walker from Tulane, obviously a former Jelly Fam member with Javon Quinterly, so everybody knows that name. But KJ Buffin was a really steady player in the SEC for Ole Miss. They return Trey Jemison. They get two free-year eligibility guys back with Mike Ertl, who was a really streaky scorer last season but had a few games against Rice where he scored in the mid-20s. And then you get Quan Jackson back, who's a really good defender, one of the best defenders in the conference. I like this UAB team quite a bit. They add a lot from the portal, like I said. Tyreek Lequeur, another name coming in from South Alabama who can score the ball. They have a lot of depth. I have Louisiana Tech second, but I think they have more upside than UAB. I think UAB is a safer pick. I think Louisiana Tech is definitely the higher upside pick. And then when you look at the rest of the conference, you kind of have a mix of teams after that where I'm kind of like, okay, you might win some games, but I don't think you're going to contend for that top two. I like North Texas. I think Grant McCaslin's a great coach, but you lose Javion Hamlet, who's definitely a big loss because he was everything for that team last season. But you get Marjorie McBride back, who can really shoot the ball from outside. They don't make the tournament without McBride because he hit a big time three against Western Kentucky to tie that game and send it to overtime in the Conference USA title game. And then you have a guy like Thomas Bell coming back, and a guy I like a lot, Tyler Perry, coming in from Coffeyville Community College. He's going to be one of the best scorers in the conference in my eyes. He can really shoot the ball from deep. Coffeyville won the JUCO National Championship at the D1 level. He is very impressive for that team, super efficient. He's going to be a good piece, and Rice is going to be fun to watch. I'm not sure they're going to defend very well, but they've started going by green light U because they love shooting the ball from deep. They'll probably shoot the ball from deep probably like 53% of their possessions. They want to shoot the ball from deep a lot. They have a guy like Quincy Olivari and Travis Evie who transferred in from VMI a few years back. And then you have Carl Pierre coming in from UMass. They have some guys on that team who can really shoot the ball from outside, and that's exactly what Coach Pera wants to do at Rice. I think they're going to be really fun to watch. They might not win a ton of games, but I could see them being top five for sure.
For me, I think it's UAB's lead to lose at this point. I mean, obviously, they were second in the Conference USA West Division last year. And you mentioned all the additions that they made in the portal this year. If I had to pick a team, I think it would be their league to lose out there in the Conference USA. But like you said, I think they're definitely going to be a team that has something to say about that. I want to circle back to your list of breakout players, man, because there's a few more conferences that I definitely want to hit with you. We're going to start with the A-10. You had Jameer Watkins as your breakout player in the A-10, obviously from BCU, obviously with them losing Bones Highland to the draft, and then obviously them losing Ace Baldwin to torn Achilles. I think Watkins is definitely going to be in for a year, so I'll let you make your case for Watkins, and I'm going to give you who my breakout player is in the A-10 this year.
Yeah, I think Watkins is a much better shooter than he showed last season. I think that's part of the reason why he shot like 29% from deep. I think he's a much better shooter than that. I think he can shoot close to 35, 36. And we saw a guy at VCU last year, Vince Williams, was a terrible shooter before last season, and he shot 44% from deep. I think Jameer Watkins, if VCU is able to be in that top three of the A-10, they need Jameer Watkins to be that guy. He's a good passer for his size. He can defend multiple positions. I think Jameer Watkins is a guy that can really burst onto the scene next season, because they need him to, quite frankly, because VCU is going to defend, but they have to find scoring. I like Marcus Sahonis coming in from Washington. He could really fill it up, but you need guys who can score, because you're losing. I mean, Ace Baldwin's not a great scorer, but he's really good at setting the table. One of the best passers in the A-10, but Bones Highland was the best scorer in the A-10, and he's gone. So you have to find somebody to replace that production, and I think that guy's Jameer Watkins. Even though they play different positions, you need to find that replacement for that amount of scoring.
Now I'm going to cheat a little bit, with my pick, because you I know the criteria was a player that did not average double figures, and this guy did average just exactly 10 points per game in the A-10 last year, which technically would disqualify him from
the That's cheating. That's cheating.
It is cheating, but I'm going to cheat a little bit for this pick. And my guy is going to be Josh Oduro. I mean, I think this guy is going to be
I knew he was going to be a George Mason player. I knew that was coming.
That dude, I saw him last week.
He's good. No, he's good. He's good. I like him. Very skilled. Handles the ball well for a guy his size. Good mid-range game. I like him a lot.
Yeah, I'm all in on Oduro being potentially a all-conference caliber player this year. I mean, he's added some range to his jump shot. He's putting it on the floor, and his touch around the rim is just unbelievable. And obviously, I think this year with them losing as much as they did, losing Tyler Cole, losing Jordan Miller, losing A.J. Wilson, and also losing
Javon Green
at the USF. I mean, I think they're obviously going to have a little bit lighter in the front court this year. They added Hollywood Gaines from Tennessee, but he's, I think, more going to be a energy kind of guy, come in, rebound, defend. So I think he's going to have to handle the bulk of the scoring load on the interior. Obviously, I think they're going to get a lot from Deshaun Schwartz. I think he's going to have a huge year for them this year as well, scoring the ball.
Schwartz a lot.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a huge year for them. But I think Oduro is going to be a guy that can attempt to get you 16, 17 points a game and 8, 9, 10 rebounds a game for Mason this year. And I think they have a chance to be in the top 4 or 5 in the A-10. So I know I did cheat a little bit with that pick. Look, I'm telling you, I think with Schwartz, with Devon Cooper as well, also from Morehead State. I mean, he's a guy who was second on the team in scoring last year at Morehead State, a team who obviously won the Ohio Valley Conference last year. He came on pretty strong towards the end of the year, can shoot it. He's also very, very experienced for vision, and they're going to get an Australian freshman, a guy named Blake Jones, who's really, really good. I think he's going to be able to come in. I think he has a chance to start at the fourth, and I think it's going to be either him or Ticket at the fourth for them. But you're going to have Oduro. Jamal Harbaugh looked really good the other day as well. He's shooting the ball extremely well. Guy obviously played a lot of minutes for them last year. But I think with Hartwell, Schwartz, Devon Cooper from Morehead State, and then with Ticket and with Blake Jones, and then also obviously with Josh Oduro, I think they're going to have a chance to be one of the better teams in the A-10 this year. I think I have a lot of faith in Kim English in year one being able to come in. Obviously, they finished fifth last year in the A-10, and I think this year they have a chance to be around that same ballpark again in the A-10 this year.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see them be like top seven. I'm not necessarily buying top four or five, but the upside's there. I just kind of want to see it first. But I think the clear top, you know, two in the A-10 is definitely St. Bonaventure 1 and Richmond number 2. Then after that, you can kind of debate a bunch of teams. I have Dayton 3rd and VCU 4th, but I can hear arguments for a bunch of other teams. St. Louis is somewhere in that mix. I think they need to add another piece, and they're in the mix for some guys in the transfer portal. DeAndre Jones from Central Arkansas, who's a really steady guard, can really shoot the ball from deep, shot 52% from deep last year. In limited games, he only played like 10 games, but he had 19 against Baylor, recently received an offer from them. So who knows, if they add him, he could be another piece for the Billikens.
Yep.
So that's actually interesting, man. I want to ask you, because obviously, you know, we know VCU lost Bones Highland. We mentioned how they lost Ace Baldwin. Why are you so high on VCU, man? You said that you had to finish maybe fourth.
I was wondering the same thing. I'm not very high on VCU right now. I don't have them as a top five team right now just because of everything they lost. I don't know how they're going to score. I don't really know where their scoring is going to come from this year. We know that they're going to defend, but I don't know how they're going to really be able to score enough points to keep up with some of the better teams in the conference.
Yeah, man. Watching VCU last season at the game with George Mason, I mean, Bones Island was a one-man wrecking crew out there. Obviously, you had Vince Williams, you know, slash and make a few open shots. And like you mentioned, Sean, you know, Ace Baldwin was going to get into the lane and get another guy a shot. So if you lose both of those guys, I'm not really sure where the production is going to come from. So what, you know, why are you so high on VCU and then putting them into your top five into the A-10?
Part of it's just believing Mike Rhodes can coach this team at a high level, but Hassan Ward's a really good player inside, one of the best shot blockers in the A-10. He can score inside. He's not a versatile offensive player, but he blocks shots, he's athletic, and can score at the rim. But what it comes down to for me is that they add Marcus Sahonis, who had he had 5 games scoring 20-plus points last season, including a career-high 29 against Washington State. He had 29 of Washington's 65 in that game. Washington was pretty bad last season, but Sahonis was able to score pretty good last year at times. He can shoot the ball from deep. I think he's the guy that can score, you know, 12, 13, 14 points per game for VCU. Like, and I'd like Jameer Watkins. I like Vince Williams. And last year I had VCU like 6th or 7th in the preseason. Obviously, that was nowhere near correct. I just thought with all the losses of Marcus Evans, Marcus Santos Silva, Isaac Van, I thought losing all those guys would put them in the, you know, middle of the conference. But Mike Rhodes was able to put it together. Bones Highland was awesome, of course. He's going to be a first-round pick more than likely. But I think Mike Rhodes will figure it out this season. And I don't think the A-10 is super deep, so that plays into it. But I liked a lot of the pieces they add and return. I think VCU is going to be solid. They're not going to be super deep, but they'll be good.
Now, I want to jump to the MAC. Your breakout player, who I think was a great pick, was Aiden Carpenter. Obviously, Siena's losing a lot. They're losing a top three scorer Jalen Piggott, transferring to Penn State. And then, obviously, Manny Campbell, the player of the year, electing to enter the draft. And then Jordan King, obviously, electing to transfer from Siena. So I think Aiden Carpenter is going to definitely be in for a huge year in the MAC. So I think that was a great pick. My pick for a breakout player in the MAC is going to be Fusini Drame from St. Peter's. Obviously, he averaged 8-7 last year for St. Peter's. And with the departure of Casey Nadefo from St. Peter's, obviously, he was a first-team all-league guy. I think Drame is going to be in for a big year in the front court in St. Peter's. He's a guy who can get off the glass. I think, you know, if he can find a way to kind of refine his game on the block, from year two to year three, I think he could be in for a huge year in the MAC. I think St. Peter's is going to be relying on him a lot this year to kind of produce. So I think my breakout player in the MAC this year is going to be Fusini Drame from St. Peter's.
Yeah, I thought about Drame for sure, but I opted to go Aiden Carpenter, of course. Part of that comes down to Siena, just like you said, losing their top three guys. They'll need somebody to score, and I think that guy could be Aiden Carpenter. Is a very good scorer in high school. He can run the point if you need him to, but he can play 1-3. He's versatile. He needs to be a better shooter this season, which is the biggest thing for him. He needs to shoot the ball from the line better, but he also missed a good amount of games with injuries last year, so I think he's going to be a good piece this season. Drame, I agree with you. I think he could be in for a big season with Casey Nadefo transferring, even though it's what day is it? Let me check my phone. July 12th, and he still hasn't transferred anywhere. So, I mean, I'd imagine he probably wants to transfer somewhere at some point, but we're getting close to a point where he's, you know, taking forever. So I guess we'll see what happens. But St. Peter is just so bad offensively that kind of plays into not including a guy like Drame, because they might score in like the 40s or 50s every night, and that's a problem, I feel like.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's – I mean, that was my concern, too, with the Drame, only because, you know, if you look at St. Peter's, you know, they have a tendency to have, you know, a bunch of guys in that, you know, 8-9 point per game range. They have a lot of guys that can kind of, you know, kind of a do it by committee, you know, type of guy. So, you know, as far as breakout, I don't know, man. We got to see if Shah Holloway's going to, you know, I don't know if Shah Holloway's going to be able to have a guy that's going to, you know, average 15, 16 points per game, or, you know, double figure points per game, or just because of how they play, you know. But I think it'll definitely be intriguing to see. How do we feel about the MAC next year? Who are your guys' favorites? I mean, I think obviously Iona right now is the favorites coming off of, you know, winning the league last year, and then what Patino has been able to kind of do in the portal. But, you know, outside of Iona, who do you guys like in the MAC for next season?
Well, I had a take on Iona that people did not like. I'll say that. I said that they're going to go undefeated in the conference, and I don't think that's that much of a hot take, honestly. When you break, no, well, no, you can say that, but let me break it down. So, they'll be favored in every single conference game. There's no question about that. It doesn't matter where they go. Every single game in conference play, they will be favored. So Vegas thinks they'll be able to do it, probably.
The MAC in the conference is just impossible to go undefeated. Like, you're going to go to Buffalo for two games to play in Kinesis and at Niagara. And no matter how bad those teams are, it is extremely hard to sweep that trip on the road when you're going – when you're driving 7-8 hours to Buffalo, New York to play, you know, at Kinesis and then at Niagara. And also, obviously, I think Manhattan's going to be really good this year. I think they absolutely are going to return a lot of players. They have one of the best top sevens, obviously, outside of Iona. In the league this year, I think they were able to do a pretty good job in the portal, and that rivalry between Iona and Manhattan is always going to be some closely contested games. And I think they're going to drop one to Manhattan, whether it's at home or on the road, and I think they'll probably drop one in Buffalo to either Kinesis or Niagara. No matter how good those teams are, I think it's tough to go 2-0 coming from somebody who played in the league for 4 years. Did we ever go 2-0 in Buffalo, Drew? I don't think we ever went 2-0 in Buffalo. Like, spooky stuff happens in Buffalo when you got to drive 8 hours and get on that bus and dive up there, man. I think Mamba's going to be pretty good. I think Ryan's going to be improved. Obviously, they've been able to do some work.
I agree with that.
To do some work in the portal this year. And it's tough to play at Ryder as well. Ryder has one of the best home courts in the entire MAC, with that small gym. The fans are always, you know, up on you. We never won at Ryder. Our 4 years at Quinnipiac, that's the only gym in the MAC that we never won a game in. I won at Iona, at Manhattan, Monmouth. We never won a game at Ryder. It's because that home court advantage really does do something. Ryder plays a whole lot better at home. They're not very good on the road ever, but they're tough to beat at home. So I think they're going to be a much improved team in the MAC this year as well. After they're getting Demencio Vaughn back, I think that's going to be huge for them. But Iona's not going undefeated. They're going to lose at least one, two or three games in the conference next year for sure.
No, I think Ryder is the second best team in the conference. But what it comes down to for Iona, for me, why I think they could go undefeated is because – how many MAC teams have been able to say this? They have a top 10 coach, undoubtedly. It's not a question in my eyes that Rick Pitino is a top 10 coach in college basketball history. Could argue top 5, and I could hear that argument. But he's top 10. No, I don't think any other MAC team has been able to say that in history. They have a top 10 college basketball coach ever. And then you had a guy who had 15 points per game at SMU 2 years ago with Tyson Jolly. He missed a lot of this season, so I don't really count too much of this year. But he was solid at times this year. He just hurt. So I think he's going to be, you know, that good Isaiah Ross replacement. Then you have Elijah Joyner, who had 10 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists for Tulsa. He's going to step in and be really good, replacing Asante Gis. Then you return Barry Jean-Louis, who's one of the best defenders, if not the best defender in the conference, one of the best defenders in the entire country. Nelly Jr. Joseph, who had 12-8 as a freshman down low. He's only going to improve. Then at the 4, you have Dylan Von Eich, and you have Quinn Slezinski coming in from Louisville, a guy who played solid minutes for a team that barely missed out on the NCAA tournament. And then you have a lot of solid pieces off the bench, like Osborne Shema, who Rick Pitino likes a lot, Ryan Myers, who can shoot the ball, Trey James, who Rick Pitino seems to like. Iona fans think he's going to be really good. I guess we'll see what happens. But not many MAC teams are able to say, hey, from a high major conference, we had two guys who averaged double figures, one who averaged 15 points per game, one who had 10-4-4, and then another high major guy who was solid for Louisville. Not great, but solid, and he's going to be another good piece this year with one of the best coaches in college basketball history. I think this is a historically good team in the conference. That's why I think that they could do historic things.
Shoot, man. Well, you heard it here first, man, from Sean Paul, Iona, 20-0 in the MAC. I'll definitely be looking forward to that. We're going to have to save this clip, man. So
go ahead.
Definitely love that. But I have to ask you, man, but before we hop off, man, obviously the draft is coming up. You know, everybody has their, you know, their fix on the guys that their team might be picking. Who are some of your mid-major guys that you have your eye on? Obviously, we know about Bones Highland. You mentioned it's probably going to be a first-round pick. I like Charles Bassey out of Western Kentucky. But who are some other guys that you think, coming from these mid-major leagues, maybe could get picked maybe late in that second round or could make a roster, you know, maybe in a two-way type of situation?
Yeah, I like Nemias Keita from Utah State. He's a big man who can really block shots, has good timing on his block shots. He's strong down low. But the thing about him is, will that translate to the NBA? Because he's not very quick, but he was the biggest player at the combine by like a significant margin in all the measurement aspects. But what it comes down to is, you saw the Jazz last year. This is what I compare it to. They had the defense player of the year with Rudy Gobert, but once the Clippers went small, he was just completely outmatched. I could see that being an issue for Keita, but not every team in the NBA is going to be able to go small like that, like the Clippers were, and be successful. So I think Keita could be a guy that ends up being pretty successful. And another guy I think about in that aspect, he's not really a mid-major guy because he wasn't a D1 player, but EJ Onu from Shawnee State, NAIA school. He's really athletic, 7'6", I believe, maybe 7'7" wingspan, 6'11", can shoot the ball from deep and blocked like 5 shots per game at the NAIA level. Obviously, that's a big drop down from D1, but if you just look at the intangibles, they're there. He's just a work in progress on the offensive end for sure.
And I'm sure, obviously, Jason Preston is going to be in that mix as well. Has great size, yeah, guard. Obviously, you know, had a great run in the tournament this year. So, obviously, he'll be in the mix as well. But I definitely think this draft is a little lighter on the mid-major guys. You know, there's no lottery guys. I think, you know, Bones Highland, I love Bones Highland. I think he's going to be a sleeper in the NBA draft. Obviously, he's great in ball screen, so I'm interested to see where he's going to go in the draft this year coming up. Like you said, we are running a little low on time, man, so we definitely want to thank you for coming on today, man. We definitely had a blast, man. You are – you know, doing amazing things over there at Making the Madness and everything that you're doing, you know, on Twitter. So make sure you guys are checking out my guy Sean Paul's Twitter. I know he has a big announcement coming up this Wednesday, 3 p.m., right? It's Eastern?
Yeah.
Small is going to be announcing his college commitment. So make sure you guys are tuned in to my guy Sean. If you want to, you know, shout out anything else you got going on, now's your time, Sean.
No, thanks for having me on, guys. It was a blast. Definitely happy to finally get on here. And, you know, anytime you guys need me, I'll definitely be here.
Yep, for sure, man. Make sure you guys are following my guy, Sean Paul, on Twitter. And this has been another episode of The Auto Bed, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Like we said at the beginning of the episode, man, make sure you guys are liking this podcast, subscribing to this podcast, giving us a rating, telling their friend to tell their friend about The Auto Bed. And as always, make sure you guys are tuning into my guy, Pull Up Tay's music. His new project, Life Ain't Fair, is out on all platforms. And we're going to let him take us out with some music. Until next time, folks, we've been another episode of The Auto Bed.
It's time to get a check, boy. Check, boy. You want a sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me. What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy.